WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Bill Balcom, you have been continuing to teach at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
That's right.
So you continue to have both an academic life and a performing life. How do the two go together for you?
Reasonably well, if you don't mind getting on planes every weekend and getting off someplace. It is wearing. The part that I think it is wearing is the travel. I don't mind being there, but it's the getting to and from that does get to one after a while. This last winter, Joni was in the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis a lot, and I was involved with the production of this is a new production of The Beggar's Opera, which is not the Threepenny Opera, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Beggar's Opera, which is the earlier one, went
which
back.
Which Threepenny was taken
from. Yeah, 18th century popular tunes, which were arranged. Now, some of them were arranged by Darius Milhaud back in the 30s, and I had to arrange the ones he had not arranged. And I was also involved with the production a lot. So I was back and forth an awful lot of times, and flying in and out of Minneapolis in the middle of the winter is not necessarily my idea of fun. But you do that sort of thing in this business. I think that's just the one thing that's a bit the most wearing is a travel. If it weren't for that, it wouldn't be so bad.
You teach composition?
I teach composition.
Are you able to kind of, you know, work into your classes, your kind of overview of music?
I try. I do find also that there's an increasing number of younger students who feel the same way, who are not necessarily accepting of the old categories.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem. Any music school or music conservatory was formed during the 19th century, and they can't help but retain, after all, the word conservatory. You're conserving. You're trying to hold on to some part of history. And there's a natural, over a number of years, things change. People's sensibilities change, and so on and so forth. And it's particularly hard to do so when we have such a schizoid attitude about music, and so on and so forth. And I think that the younger kids feel that way. I mean, I know myself as a musician. I was always interested in all different kinds of music, and it was sometimes hard to square this with the conservatory attitude, but now I find more people who want it to be that way. So it's going to be very interesting to see what will happen to the music schools in these next few years with that kind of growing attitude among students and even younger professors.
Well, the last album of yours to be released is an album by George and Ira Gershwin, and George Gershwin is an example of someone who also encompassed different styles of music.
Made them all his, of course, but I mean, it was a man who certainly didn't, I don't think, at least in his work, whatever he may have said or felt, the final impact of George Gershwin is the totality of the Irv. You don't have to say, here's the classical stuff over here and here's the other, because I mean, both of them are interpenetrated all the time.
Let's hear a selection from this album of songs by George and Ira Gershwin, Someone to Watch Over Me.
There's a saying old says that love is blind. Still we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I'm going to seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's the big affair I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with. To my monogram. Tell me, where is the shepherd for this lost lamb? There's a somebody I'm longing to see. One who watches.
Ask you how you chose the songs for the Gershwin album, because it's a similar thing to Berlin. There's so many good songs It's really difficult, I imagine, to decide which ones you want to include.
Oh, it's in fact we had a difficulty. We actually recorded this album a year and a half previously. Mm-hmm. Right, not this album. And the programming was quite different. There were a lot more. There was a Sweet and Lowdown. There was Looking for a Boy, and as we listened back to that, you know, any number of times, Bob Kimball pointed out, he said, you've got it. There's too many love songs, too many boy-girl songs. So when we went to redo it, we kept that original listing, and we kept those in program. We performed them a lot. But we started looking around for those that were unusual categories. That's how we got into, and Kay kept telling us about it. She said, you've got to do My Cousin in Milwaukee. It's a great song. Well, and Just Another Rumba.
Joni did not like that for a long time.
Oh, I didn't.
I'll tell you the truth. That's the one song I don't like.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I just
can't get into it.
It's so showbiz.
It doesn't have much of a melody, it seems.
Yeah, well, yeah. The way it was done first, I think the performer carried it. It was a lady named Lida Roberti, and she was she had been a circus performer, mm-hmm. a bareback rider. She was a big Polish woman, and she had this kind of accent, you know, and it was just hilarious, mm-hmm. I guess. And I
think
that's what
Kay
remembered.
So they put lots of H's in the thing, because every time she did the H, she'd go, hot stuff, hot. You know, she'd put that kind of X
hot
thing
stuff.
Down, you know.
Yeah.
So it was really terrific kind of showbiz. So it's hard to say, but some people like that very much, and other people don't. It's one of those things. It is much more showbiz than a lot of the other numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Kay Swift came to every one of the sessions on this album, though, and she wasn't at the first ones, which I think may have made a difference, too, because she said, no, she said, that's not on, or that's too slow, you're dragging, you know, that's not
George
what it's
all
about.
George did it this way, and all that helped a great deal. I know when I did my first Gershwin album, Kay had been there all the time, and she helped me a great deal. So the tempos, at least, mm-hmm. are right, because they would have been the tempos that George Gershwin used, because she remembers.
Mm-hmm.
So that much, at least, is authentic, and I'm very happy about mm-hmm. that.
Have you tried at all to try to get a sense of Gershwin's piano playing as well as his rhythm, but his, you know, his approach to notes and rhythms?
A little bit. I think that's one of the things I tried to do in all the accompaniments, and now having known the Gershwin piano work as much as I've had to learn it. Again, so like so many things, it's just happenstance. I never thought I was going to do a recording of Gershwin piano music. And that's just sort of happened. And out of that has come, I think, and also my association with UB Blake, I began to find out a little bit about how a person filled out a written accompaniment. Because if you do what is right down there on the page, you're always doubling the singer with your pinky, you know, because they're written in the pop songs so the person can play the melody in the same two staves. So you can't do that all the time. It's obviously going to hamstring the singer. It's never going to sound very pretty to have the piano note behind the voice all the time anyway. So you first thing you have to do is take that out. After that, you have to amplify it and build it back out. There are, fortunately, a fair number of Gershwin's own recordings that he did with, you know, with the Astaires and that gives you an awful lot of idea of what his own style was like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've used that, although I have not slavishly imitated.
Mm-hmm. Joan, how do you like singing the lyrics of Ira Gershwin?
Oh, I mean, how do you, a song like Isn't It a Pity? It's just great. It's what I like about, I'm attracted to songs that aren't all one note, as it were, all the way through. What I like about Isn't It a Pity it's sad, you know, but there's also parts that are so funny, you know, just the way life is. In the middle of a really tragic moment, you'll slip on a banana peel or something, and here it is, she's saying, oh, we missed all those years, we could have been happy if I'd have known you. And then she says, well, there I was reading Schopenhauer, you know, and you know, which is...
And so you see this in an audience, people are in tears, and all of a sudden they start to giggle, and they don't quite know what to do with their own reaction. And that's a wonderful place to be, right on that edge.
Well, yeah. even the title, yeah. Isn't It a Pity, you know, before I knew the song, I thought, oh, Isn't It a Pity, that must be a really sad song. And of course, uh-huh. It's not a song about sadness, it's a song about discovery.
Right.
Yeah, one that I think I'm very happy with on this particular album, and that's probably my favorite as far as performances is concerned. Is Nice Work If You Can Get It.
That's Bob Kimball's favorite, too. He says he likes the way we do that the best.
That's usually done by people, Nice Work If You Can Get It, and You Can Get It If You Try. That is really kind of a terrifically hard-edged, you know, up-tempo, very jazzy, scat kind of version. And it's really a wistful little song. It's not a funny song. It's Why Can't I Have It, too? You know, it's actually, in a way, it's almost autobiographical. It's like George Gershwin's long history with ladies. He never seemed to find the woman of his dreams, and he was always looking for the woman of his dreams. Therefore, he could never settle for the woman he actually met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was sort of his problem. And so, in a way, I don't know whether it was Ira drawing a picture of George, but in a way, you almost had that feeling.
Yeah,
it's
I
a
think,
very
well,
personal
well, being
song.
Brothers, just like that last song that he wrote, Love Is Here to Stay, that's wonderful. And that really kind of mirrors what must have been going on in Ira's head. I mean, you know, he's gone, but still... You know, we always have what was there.
Well, we'll be hearing that in a few minutes. Uh-huh. But the song we're going to hear next is one that I wasn't at all familiar with till hearing your album. It's called Just Another Roomba.
Uh-huh.
I like it a lot. Can you tell us where it comes from?
That was done, let's see. This was one they had fooled around with a long time, wasn't it? It was something they, Vincent Minnelli heard it.
At parties. They used to do party songs that nobody ever knows. There's a wonderful one about four fiddlers called Misha, Yasha, Tasha, Sasha, or something like that, which was just done whenever one of the famous, you know, either Spivakovsky or Misha Auer, not Misha Auer, Misha Auer was a comic. I was mixing them up because of Leopold Auer, or Yasha Heifetz. And if any of those fiddlers was any at the party, where George and Ira Gershwin, they would, at a drop of a hat or not even, sit down and do their number
right,
about...
Right, and anyone who was at those parties remembers those
about
songs.
Russian violinists.
They were like an in,
you know,
thing.
Yeah, and so this was also kind of an in thing kind of song. This had come from... George had gone to Cuba, and he heard so much of this sort of stuff that he thought he'd have his own little satire. Then Minnelli asked him, would you put it in this movie, which he was going to be doing, and then it got dropped. So it never
so it
really
was
got...
never used. That's why it's it was never done in a movie or show. So this is.
I think Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella Fitzgerald recorded it, but I think this may be the second.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There may be some others. I don't know about those. But all I know is of hers.
It's a funny, you know, the word plays. I like Ira's words to things. They do have that two-sided quality. That's, again, why I'm attracted to Loren's heart, you know, for that same reason. So witty, so quick, you know. Just, it catches you in emotionally because you just slide so naturally from one thing to the other, and it takes you such a long way so easily before you realize how far you've gone, how much you care about the thing.
Okay, well, let's hear Just Another Roomba. Music by George Gershwin, lyrics by Ira Gershwin, sung by Joan Morris, Bill Balcom at the piano.
It happened to me on a trip to the West Indies. Oh, I'm all at sea since that trip to the West Indies. I'm jittery, I'm twittery, I guess I'm done for, I guess I'm through, and it's something about which there's nothing anyone can do. It isn't love, it isn't money trouble, it's a very funny trouble. It's just another rumba, but it certainly has my number. So that I can't eat or slumber. music laid below. There it goes again, just another rumba, which I heard only last September. I'm a wreck, why did I have to succumb? Can you imagine? Cucaracha who just went la and gave up swinging hacha. Ah, at first it was diviner, but it turned out a Cuban Frankensteiner. Ah, it's got me by the throat. Oh, what's the antidote? Ah, it brought me woe and strife. Oh, where's the gun or knife? It's the rumba that lighted. Just another rumba, which has got me under its thumb. So much so that I can't eat or slumber. Can you imagine anything dumb? Why did I have to succumb to that rumba?
I'm wondering what your plans for future albums are.
Well, we did a group of Thomas Moore songs at a music festival last summer, and we had thought of my background is on my father's side is Welsh and Irish and a little bit of English, and I love those songs. I just love those folk tunes. When Bill met me, I was singing with a harpist, and we did quite a few folk songs in Central Park and other places, and I would like to sing some of those. The tunes are just wonderful, and I love his poetry. The Last Rose of Summer is one of his, and Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms. What he did was he took tunes from a book that had been collected of Irish folk songs, and he put his own words to them. And we thought of doing maybe an album of these. We might still one day.
Mm-hmm.
The other album we were thinking of sometime in the future is Kay Swift.
And of course, Walter Donaldson is one of the great ones. These are just among, you know, some of the older writers. Dietrich and Schwartz are wonderful very often. There are wonderful things by, well, of course,
Harry Woods and Harry Warren.
Harry Warren is still around, too, a fine composer. He did all kinds of things. A bit like Irving Berlin in that every decade of his work is very different from any other decade. And people sometimes said, well, does Irving Berlin have a style? I said, I don't know. I can't really define it, but I always know it's Irving Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Warren, on the other hand, is the kind of person that he wrote so many things that if you don't know who it's by, it's usually by Harry Warren. I don't know why it is. Fine writer. There are a lot of other people, too. Harold Arlen, of course, has been very plowed by a lot of different people, so I don't know anything we have to do, although I like a lot of his stuff.
Or you could, someone like Yip Harburg, I mean, how many different people he's written with?
Well, including Harold Arlen, of course,
Wright
that's where the whole
and,
Wizard of Oz was them.
Oh, was it Finian's Rainbow? Who wrote
that's,
that?
That's Burton Lane, is a fine writer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of very...
Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, those early things he did, The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. And there are lots of good composers and a lot of good writers that are around and are starting to be found out.
Someone else asked me that the other day. Well, yeah. You know, what's your next project, you know? I really don't... We have several things in the air, but there's not one main thing we're thinking about right now. I guess because we have a lot of things scheduled for the next year. And
I have a lot of writing to do now. I have two big commissions I have to finish this year and another one next year. And... this in the middle of also putting together the score for her for Captain Jinx, which is that she's doing up at the Guthrie in Minneapolis. So there's that.
I have to start working on all my coloratura stuff again because the character is
opera singer,
a woman who's coming to the stage. She's an opera singer making her debut in La Traviata. It's set in the 1870s, so I'll have to do a little snatch from that, which I did at my first song recital when I was 19. So, but it's been years since I did any of that stuff. So,
yeah,
I'll have to get into that repertoire. The 19th century Yes. You know, the more florid, you know, embellished. Like, I want to do, we've done it in our concerts before, Home Sweet Home, with all the embellishments, like Adelina Patti did it. I have a record of her singing it. And I want to, you know, get into some of that. And that will also bring in some of the Stephen Foster, the Henry Work, the James Bland, all that period. We want to do some of the popular songs, too.
Well, it sounds like you have exciting periods ahead of both of you. I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today. It's been a real great pleasure.
It's been our pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
Ours too.
Not for